Okay, good morning. This week's shiur, as always, in Maseches Megillah, is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their son, Yomi, Yosef Menachem, and Gershon. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Uyui Nishma, Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim. And we are beginning a brand new perek, the fourth perek of Maseches Megillah. The last parak in Maseches Megillah, so we're almost there. We're starting at the very bottom of Chaf Hey Amud Beis with new parak of new Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Bnei Ha'ir." So the Mishnah is going to talk about selling various dvarim shebekdusha or a shul and accoutrements to a shul, and what you can do with the money. With the proceeds of the sale of the shul. The Gemara is going to very quickly transition into a discussion about whether you're allowed to sell a shul altogether, which is very relevant halakha maisa for people who want to sell a shul. So the Mishnah says, "Bnei Ha'ir shemachru rechova shel ir." So if the people, the townspeople, sell the square of the city, the public square of the city. So if you remember back when we were in Maseches Tainus, we talked about the fact that on some occasions, when things were dire, they would pull the teva out into the center of the city and they would daven there in a public way as kind of a last-ditch effort of davening to Hashem for rain. And so on the basis of that, the Gemara is about to explain to us, the rechov of the city, the square, the city square, has some element of kedusha to it. And so therefore, if you sell that area, the money that's derived from that sale has some element of kedusha, and you can't just use it to buy candy, or you can't just use it to buy, to buy anything you want. It has some level of kedusha. So, Bnei Ha'ir shemachu rechova shel'ir, if they sell that square, lochem medam of beis hakneses, they could use that money to buy a beis hakneses. And now each of these things, as they sell it, you'll see, the general rule we're going to apply is malin bakodesh vein moridim. You can use that money to buy something a little better, a little more elevated, a little more kadosh, but you can't downgrade the money. So when you sell the rechov of the city, you could use that money to buy a beis hakneses. Beis hakneses, if you sell a shul, woken teva, then you could buy a bima, the shulchan that you use to read the Torah from. Teva lokhin matpechos, you can buy with that money the coverings or the wrappings for the Sifrei Torah. Matpechos, if you sell those, yikhu svarim. What's the gears of change here? Yikhu or lokhin svarim, you could buy Sifrei Torah. Rashi says Nevi'im Uksuvim, you could buy Tanakh. They had them on parchment, on scrolls. Svarim lokhin Torah, if you sell those Tanakh scrolls, you can buy a Torah. Aval im machru Torah, and now we're going to reverse the order. But if you sell that thing that's the highest kedusha, you can't use those proceeds to buy something that's a step down. So we're going to reverse now. Aval im machru Torah, if you sell a sefer Torah, lo yiklu svarim, you can't buy sifrei Tanakh. Svarim, if you sell sifrei Tanakh, lo yiklu matpechos, you can't buy the coverings for the svarim. Matpechos lo yiklu teva, you can't buy the shulchan. Teva lo yiklu beis hakneses, if you sell that, you can't buy a beis hakneses, because that's a lower level of kedusha. Beis hakneses al yiklu es harachov, you can't buy back the square because that's a lower level of kedusha. V'chein b'masrayim, not only can you not buy these things with the principal amount of the money, but you can't even use any leftover money for change. That. You have to use every, not even the change.
But isn't that obvious? I mean, by reversing the order, we already got it.
You mean you didn't have to go through every step?
Right.
It could have just said in a much simpler way, but not the reverse, not vice versa. Yeah, I don't know. The Mishnah wanted to spell it out. I'm not sure why. Okay. Good. So and Rashi points out there that this is all based on Malin Bakodesh Velo Moridim, and he quotes the Psukim that we learned this idea from the fact that in Shmos it says that Bezalel designed the Mishkan and then Moshe built it, so that shows that Bezalel wasn't quite as holy as Moshe. He's mentioned first, then Moshe was the one who had to step in and build the Mishkan. That's the derivation, and then there are all sorts of discussion here about where you really derive Malam Kodesh Vol Meridim. But that's the Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Bnei Ha'ir Shemachru Chovo Shel Ir." Let's say, in the first instance in the Mishnah, the city people sell the Rechova, the square of the city square. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Zu Divrei Rav Menachem Bar Yosi Stumata. This is the view of Rav Menachem Bar Yosi, and the Mishnah just quotes it as a Stam Mishnah without attributing it to the source. But it's not; he's not the only opinion here. Avachachamim Omrim, the Chachamim disagree, and they say Harachov Ein Bo Mishum Kedusha. The Chachamim say no. Just because you daven there occasionally doesn't ascribe to it a level of Kedusha. The Rechov is just the square of the city. It doesn't have any Kedusha, and it doesn't get included in this Mishnah, in these halachos. The Gemara says, V'Rav Menachem Bar Yosi Mai Taimei. What was his reasoning? Why did he think that the Rechov had a level of Kedusha? Ho'o Va'am Nispalim Bo B'taniyos of Ma'amados. As we mentioned, because that there were times when that's when they went out and they daven there. Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan say, Ahu Akrai Ba'alma, Rabbanan said that wasn't a permanent enough situation. A shul is one thing, you daven there every week, day in, day out. But when it came to the city square, that was just something that happened from time to time when there was an emergency, and that does not enough to give it any specific Kedusha. Okay. Beis HaKnesses Lochem Teva. So we said in the Mishnah that if you sell the Beis HaKnesses, this is what you're allowed to do with the proceeds. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rav Yonason, Lo Shanu El Beis HaKnesses Shel Kfarim. The only time you could have a discussion of the sale of a Beis HaKnesses is if it's the Beis HaKnesses of a small village. Of a Beis HaKnesses Shel Krachim, but when it comes to a Beis HaKnesses of a city, Kevin de Me'alma Asulei, since people come from all over the place, everyone knows that this is the Beis HaKnesses that people daven in. The city is a place that people pass through. There's traffic from other places. It's not only the townspeople that are using this Beis HaKnesses. So therefore, lo matsu mezav nile, you can't just sell a Beis HaKnesses that's from a city. Dahavale derabim, because the local people who would be the ones doing the sale, they don't control it. It belongs to the rabbim. It belongs to really the Jews of all the world. Because when they built this space in Mikdash, the expectation was that people from all over would come and use it. And the local townspeople don't have the authority to sell that shul. They don't have the authority to sell that shul. So this is kind of the first important halacha regarding the sale of a Beis HaKnesses that's derived from this daf, that's derived from these few dafim about the sale of a shul, which is that there's an important distinction to be made between a shul of a small town, where it's just used by the locals, and therefore we can assume that the locals control it and they could sell it, they have the authority to sell it, and a shul in a big city where people pass through it all the time, where the local townspeople aren't assumed to have the authority to sell it. We'll see, the Gemara is going to limit this halacha in a moment, and then on the bottom of the daf even further. So Amar Rav Ashi, Hai Bei Kenishna de Masa Mechasya. Ravashi said there was a specific shul in the town of Masa Mechasya, and Afagav de Me'alma Asula, and even though it's true that was a city, and even though it had traffic and people came from all sorts of cities and daven there, however, Kevin da Daita Didika Asu, since it was built with the intention of me having the authority to be in charge, so Baina Mizavninala, if I wanted to, I could sell it. So that's an important qualification. If the city was built with the expectation that one person, let's say, for example, the rabbi of the city, one person would make decisions about its sale, so that's sufficient to give the authority to that one person to make decisions about its sale. And even if it's a shul that is traversed by people from other cities, that doesn't cancel out that authority, and that person can sell it. So the obvious corollary to this is kind of in modern times where we don't have one person in charge, but we have a board of directors, right? When a shul is built, typically there's not an expectation that it's owned by the whole world. Everyone understands that the board of directors of this shul owns the shul, has the authority, has the bios to make decisions about its sale. Well, and so
it's a regular community shul like ours.
Yeah,
if you have a shtiebel, it's usually run and owned by the—
yeah, a shtiebel cuts the other way. A shtiebel is even more so under the authority of one person, right? There it's owned, so to speak, by one person. And everyone assumes that person has the authority to sell it if he wants to. So that's true, for sure. And it's also arguably true with a community shul in America where it's controlled by a board of directors. So how does that all play out? And the answer is that, generally speaking, well, there's a machlokes. The Marsham actually writes that an elected board is insufficient. That the Gemara here, when it talks about an individual, it means the Rav. It means someone who has kind of halachic authority that you'd expect to have halachic authority. That's, and it's limited to that. That's the Marsham. But very many other achronim, including the Magen Avram and the Masas Binyamim and others, say that no, it's sufficient if the shul was built with a governance structure like the governance structures that we have of a board of trustees, a board of directors. That's assumed to be in the place of a yachid, who and that board can make decisions about the sale of a shul. We'll see later on in the Gemara kind of a different structure that they had of Shiva Tuve Ayir. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay. Meisve. So we have a challenge from the following. Omar of Yehuda. Meisve beis haknesses shel Torsiyim. There was a story, an incident involving the beis haknesses of the Torsiyim. Rashi says, Tzorfei Nechoshes. Back then they would have batei knesios that were organized around certain trades. So the bronze workers went to the bronze workers' shul. You have in New York City, you have the garment center shul. There were shuls that were built around or that were organized around certain trades. So this specific shul was organized around the bronze trade, and it was in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is it's not a small village. Yerushalayim is a big city. People come in and out of Yerushalayim. That's certainly a good place to visit. And what did they do? Shemachruha with Rabbi Eliezer. And they sold the shul, they sold the building to Rabbi Eliezer. And not only that, Ve'aser Bakol Tzrachim. And Rabbi Eliezer didn't just use the shul, use that building as a shul, but he would use it for all sorts of things. So they actually sold the building to someone else. Among the poskim and the halachas, it talks about the fact that many of these halachas about the sale of a shul don't really apply if you're just selling it to another group that's going to use it as a shul, right? That there's not really a halachic problem with that. The problem is when you downgrade it, when you sell it to be used as a warehouse, or when you sell it for use for something else. And here's a story where they sold the shul to Rabbi Eliezer, Fasav Kol Tzrachim, used it for all his needs. The Gemara says, "V'ahasam dekrachim ava," and that was a city. Yerushalayim was a city. So what's going on here? How could they have sold a shul of a city without the buy-in of all the people that always use that shul and that come in and out of Yerushalayim? So the Gemara answers, "Ahi bekenishta zutei hava vinu avdua." That's an exception because that was a small shul. It was just used by that trade, and they all agreed, and therefore they were able to sell it. Meisvei, another challenge. The base eretz achuzaskam. So here we're talking about a pasuk about the halacha of negayim, nigei batim, when a house or a building can get kind of the equivalent of leprosy, tzaras, and you have to tear it down. The Torah talks about this whole parsha. So the question is, where does that apply? And the Gemara says achuzaskam, since the pasuk says in your domains, in your areas, so achuzaschem mitame b'negayim, v'en Yerushalayim mitame b'negayim. That drasha teaches us that only a house in a normal area of Eretz Yisrael is subject to the laws of nigei batim, but not a house that's located in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is kind of an exception because we'll see in a moment it's not necessarily mechuak to shvatim. It's not right. Every other town in Eretz Yisrael, Gazas is given to a certain shevet, and that people in that shevet can own houses there. And since they can own houses there, they can own those houses, they're subject to the laws of Nigei Batim. But Yerushalayim is extraterritorial, and it's not necessarily subject to the Chiluk HaShvatim. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakhama. The Rabbi Yehuda says, Ani lo shamati el makom mikdash bilvad. My mesorah, my tradition was that it's only the Makom HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash itself, that's removed from the halachos of Nigei Batim. So the Gemara now jumps in and says, well, if all he's doing is saying that the Makom HaMikdash is removed from the halachos of Nigei Batim, and the reason for that is because the Beis HaMikdash is not owned by anyone, it can't be bought and sold, it's not owned by anyone, and therefore it doesn't fall into the category of Achuzaschem, of buildings that are owned, the Gemara says, the implication of him isolating only the Beis HaMikdash is ha bate kinesios ubate midrashos mitamin. The implication is that a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis Medrash is subject to the laws of Nigei Batim, even though you would have thought that they're in the same category as the Beis HaMikdash. Amai, ha dekrachim havu. How does that make any sense? They are in Yerushalayim, right? And therefore, the rules that we were just talking about that said you can't buy and sell these but the midrashos apply. So they should be in the same category as the Beis HaMikdash, namely that it's not owned by an individual and therefore it's not subject to Nigei Batim. Why does he isolate only the Beis HaMikdash to say that Nigei Batim doesn't apply there? Why doesn't he say that Nigei Batim also doesn't apply by a Beis HaKnesses? So the Gemara answers by just changing his terminology a little. Ema am Rabbi Yehuda anigo shemati el makom mikudash bovad. That Rabbi Yehuda didn't say that Nigei Batim doesn't apply just to the Beis HaMikdash. He meant to say any holy place, any consecrated place that includes shuls, it includes batei midrashos, and therefore it's consistent with what we've been saying that a Beis HaKnesses in a krach in a city is not subject to sale. You can't sell it because you need the buy-in from the whole world, and that's how we solve that problem. Now that we're on the subject of Nigei Batim, the Gemara is going to just go on a little tangent and say, B'mai Kemifligei, what is this machlokas between the Tana Kama, who held that all of Yerushalayim is removed from the halachos of Nigei Batim, and Rabbi Yehuda, who said just shuls and just the Beis HaMikdash are removed from the halachos of Nigei Batim?
With the case where it was sold to that Rav, the small thing with the torsium.
With Rabbi Eliezer, yeah.
Even if there was buy-in from the torsium, why is it that they're allowed to downgrade?
We're gonna see. There are instances. I mean, so up till now, all the Gemara has done is said that it's made a distinction and said that you can sell a Beis HaKnesses of a village, and the only thing you can't sell is a Beis HaKnesses of a krach, of a city. The only thing you can't sell is and the reason for that is because you need the buy-in from the outsiders. We haven't seen any restriction at all on the sale of a shul just because they can't sell it. Meaning the expectation is that the Mishnah just talked about what you can do with the proceeds. What you can do with the proceeds. It didn't specifically say you can't sell a shul. It just said what you can do with the proceeds. The restriction on the sale that we've encountered in this Gemara is that you need the authority to sell it. You don't have the proper authority to sell it if it's in a city, and therefore people from outside the city should also have buy-in on the sale. In a moment, we're going to kind of solve the problem with one fell swoop when we talk about Shiva Tuve Ayir, a group of people that has the authority to sell, although even that might not solve the problem of a krach. We'll see. But the answer to your question is, because it was a small shul that was just used by this group of people, the Gemara says, even though it was in a city, because it was this small group, that small group had the authority, and therefore you get out of that problem. Uh-huh. Okay. All right, so back in this Nigei Batim, what are they arguing? Why does the Tana Kama say that in all of Yerushalayim you can't have the halachos of Nigei Batim? So the Tana Kama suffer when Yischalku Yerushalayim with Shvatim. The Tana Kama holds that Yerushalayim was never divided into territories of Shvatim. For Rabbi Yehuda suffer in Yischalku Yerushalayim with Shvatim. He said they were. Uvepuksa Dani Tanoi. And it's based on the following Machokas HaTanoim. The Tanya, we have a brisa that says, Mahia Bechalko Shel Yehuda. What was contained in the Chiluk of Yehuda, meaning Yerushalayim was split between Yehuda and Binyamin. So the question is, where did the boundary line run? It seems to have run right through Har Abayis. So the Mishnah, or the Brisa says, what was contained in the Chiluk of Yehuda? Har Abayis, Halishkos, Va'azaros. So Har Abayis and the Lishka, the chambers of the Beis HaMikdash, Va'azaros and the courtyards of the Beis HaMikdash. What was in the Chiluk of Binyamin? Ulam, the actual structure, the entrance hall of the Beis HaMikdash. The Heichal, the actual sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash, the most important part. Ubeis Kodesh HaKadashim, and the most important part was the Kodesh HaKadashim. That was all in Chiluk of Binyamin. But there was a little exception. There was a gerrymandered strip of Chiluk Yehuda that would kind of jut out into Chelak Binyamin, v'nechneses v'chelko shel Binyamin, uba mizbeach banoi. And that's where the mizbeach sat, even though the mizbeach was in the Ulam, or was in the Heichal, That was technically in the Chelek of Yehuda. Now this caused some consternation for Binyamin, because Binyamin thought that he was in charge of, or Binyamin, the actual Binyamin HaTzadik, the Gemara is about to tell us, the original Binyamin, he saw it with Ruach HaKodesh that this would be how things would be organized, and that caused him a little bit of pain to see that his Chelek, which was the Ulam and the Heichal, was kind of gerrymandered in a way that he would lose a little bit where the Mizbeach sat. He would be downtrodden about this every day, the fact that this Ritzua Yotza, that Chelek Binyamin was, that the Mizbeach was in Chelek Binyamin, that it ate it up. When it's describing Binyamin, it says, Chofef means like covering, that it was, had like a garment covering it. Rashi explains, Adam ha-mitztar chofef mischachek begadav. Someone who's very upset, he kind of hides himself and cuddles himself in his garments. And so that's what the pasuk refers to when it says, Chofef alav kayom, he was always covered. It's because he was all upset about this situation. And as a result of him being upset about it, or kind of to make up for the fact that Yehuda took that little strip where the Mizbeach sat, therefore, pay him back, Binyamin got the benefit of being the host of the Shechina, meaning that the Kodesh HaKadoshim was in Chelek Binyamin, that gave him a little solace for the fact that the Mizbeach sat in Chelek Yehuda.
This is not Binyamin Ben Yaakov. This is
Binyamin Ben Yaakov, I think. Binyamin Atzadik. What does Rashi say? I assumed it was Binyamin Atzadik.
Yeah, and the Pasuk, it's...
Yeah, it's the original Binyamin. Yeah, the original Binyamin. I mean, he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that this was how things were going to be... Rashi says specifically, Sofeb Ruach HaKodesh Shekein Asu Liyos Mitztar Alah. He saw that this is the way it would be, and he was very upset about it. Okay, so that's one Tana. One Tana says that Yerushalayim was Nischacha with Shvatim, as we just said, that that there were specific boundaries through the Beis Hamikdash for Chelek Binyamin and Chelek Yehuda. The high Tana and the other Tana, Savar lo Nischacha Yerushalayim with Shvatim, that held that Yerushalayim was an international city, so to speak, that there was no boundary in Yerushalayim that was belonged to all the Shvatim, wasn't split up. The Tanya. And that's consistent with the following brisa: in maskirin batim b'Yerushalayim, mivnei she'ein on shelhem. That you can't, if you happen to live in Yerushalayim, you don't really, really own your home, and therefore you can't rent it out. When people would come to be ola regel, when people come to Yerushalayim to visit, they would be able to stay there for free. You couldn't rent it out to them. Rav Lazar Omer Aflo Mitos. You couldn't even rent out a bed. It's not just that you couldn't rent out the whole piece of real estate, but you couldn't even rent out a bed. And lefichach oros kachim, so therefore the hides of the karbanos, specifically, as Rashi says, points out the toda and the shlamim, the bailim, the people who offer those karbanos, get the hides. And so they kind of come to the Yerushalayim, hang out in Yerushalayim, do all sorts of karbanos. They come back to their host's home with these valuable hides. So, and the minhag apparently was that they would give the hides to their hosts as payment for allowing them to stay there in their houses in Yerushalayim. And so Rav Lazar points out, or Rav Lazar ben Shimon points out, I think it's a girsa here, Rav Lazar ben Bar Tzadok or Rav Lazar ben Shimon. So he says, Oros kachim balyush pizin notlin osan bizroa, that the owners of the houses apparently didn't have the right to collect any rent, but they would take these hides by force. I'm not sure if that means they literally took them by force, or it means the fact that the hosts willingly took the hides as payment for the rent is kind of illicit, is kind of a rogue taking, because they really didn't have the right to collect rent. And it's just that
when they had a sacrifice, they burnt everything.
They
skinned it.
It depended on the sacrifice. And Ola was burnt entirely. A shlamim wasn't. Rashi points out a toda and shlamim, they would get to keep the hides. So Amar Abayi, as Abayi says, Yash Shmamina, we see from this, Orach Ara Lamishvak Inish Gulfa Umashcha Bushbuze, that it's a polite, it's kind of the way of the world, that when you stay in someone's house and you come across some hides, you give the hides to your host. That's a nice thing to do. That's what you should do. It's a nice gift. Right. You bring a bottle of wine, you bring hides, depending on, what you have. Okay, so anyway, that explains this machlokas tanaim, whether Yerushalayim was in Iskalko or Shvatim or not. Now we're going to get back on track, back on topic with our Beis Hamikdash. And here's Rava's statement. Amar Rava. Lo Shanu, Rava says, this rule in our Mishnah that said that you can't use the proceeds for something that's less kadosh, right, this rule, it only applies Elishlo Machrub Shiva Tuve Ya'ir B'maimed Anshe Ya'ir. That's only true if the base, let's use the Beis HaKnesses as an example, if the Beis HaKnesses wasn't sold by the Shiva Tuve Ya'ir. Back then they had this kind of town council consisting of seven people, the seven elders of the city, that would vote to do things, and in this specific instance, B'maimed Anshe Ya'ir, they would vote along with a communal vote. So it was all ratified not only by the town council of the Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, but also ratified by popular vote as well. And when that happened, that's a sufficient enough authority that not only does it allow you to sell the Beis HaKnesses, but it also says that the proceeds of the Beis HaKnesses can be used for other things. It neutralizes the Kedusha, and it's not a problem. That's what he said. Al-Machru Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, V'maimed Anshe Ya'ir. So if that the authority process took place, it was ratified by them. So then, afiu l'mishta be'shichra shapir dami. You could even use the funds to buy beer. Mm-hmm. You could even use it to buy wine. You can use it for any purpose.
It's absolutely fine
for the whole community. Yeah, you can't steal the money, right? Exactly. But the problem of the kedusha of the money that we identified in the Mishnah goes away when you sold it with the authority of the Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, B'maimed Anshe Ya'ir. Okay. Ravina, I took some notes on some of these halachas. I just want to make sure we're not missing anything. Okay, we'll get to some of those in a moment. Okay, Ravina, Havle Ahutiva, Debe Kanishta. What's the Beis? Ahutiva. He had a certain, Ravina had runes of a Beis HaKnesses. So this was not a functioning Beis HaKnesses anymore. This was runes of a Beis HaKnesses. And again, the same issues came up. Can you sell it if it's the Beis HaKnesses of a local town? So we said a small village, you could sell it with the authority of the people. But if it's a krach, if it's a big city, so then you can't necessarily even sell it. And then if you sell it, if it's Shiva Tuve Ya'ir selling it, so then you can use the proceeds for anything. Any public use, but if not, then you can't. So he had these runes of a Beis HaKnesses. He wanted to know what he can do there. So also, Kameder Rav Ashi, Amar Lei, Mahu B'Mizra. And he said to Rav Ashi, he came to Rav Ashi and he said, can I plant a garden there? There used to be a shul there. There's clearly not a shul there anymore. It's just runes. Can I plant a garden there? So Amar Lei, Zil Zavne Meshiva Tuve Ya'ir, B'maimen Anshe Ya'ir V'Zara. So he says, so Rav Ashi responded to him, just go with the best fix you have here, which is that use the authority of the Shiva Tuve Ya'ir. If you use that town council and the town council consults with the population, so then it's not a problem, and then you can even plant there.
He had to buy his own property back.
He had to buy his own property back, I guess. Again, to get rid of that Kedusha issue. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This issue of the runes kind of gets into another issue that comes up often with these halachos, which is, does it change anything if the shul is in disuse? Right here, it's an extreme example where the shul is actually in ruins. But does it change anything if it's like, let's say the shul is in an inner city, and in the 1960s and 1970s, everyone left the inner city and went to the suburbs, and now no one lives there anymore, and you have this building that was a shul for, that had been a shul for 50 years, does that change anything at all? Can you sell that building?
That's Passaic.
That's Passaic, yeah. Or every other urban center in New Jersey. Right, yeah, the shul downtown. Which I noticed, if you drive on Route 21, there's a big for sale sign on that old shul that you see from Route 21.
Yeah.
We should all chip in and buy it.
It's like a Baptist church now.
It, yeah, but I think the church is selling it.
The church is selling it.
The church is, we could buy back, yeah.
Right. Right over Van Houten also, there's an old Methodist church that was built like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just a plain brick facade building.
Yeah.
And I found out when I was working on the area over there, it's a Methodist church. That's also for sale, that property.
Yeah.
We just pushed them out. It's too many of us.
Too many, yeah. Right. Talk about white flight, right?
But this is exactly what happened.
Exactly. The population moved. But, and literally, it happened everywhere. It happened in Jersey City. It happened in Newark. It happened in Patterson. You know,
they haven't resurrected that community. I'm saying that's what happened here in Passaic. They just moved out and they had to make choices.
Right. So Moshe Feinstein deals with a question of selling a shul to a church. He writes a shuva in 1957, I think it was, Tavshin Yud Zayin, where he talks about exactly the situation. The people left the city, and now a church wanted to buy the shul. So there are all sorts of questions about whether you can sell a shul directly to a church. You might need a middleman. You know, there are all sorts of discussion among the poskim about how this is possible, how it's possible at all.
B'nai Jacob was sold to a church. I was involved with the sale because it was going to be sold to a church. It was sold from Yidden in town.
Uh-huh.
They completely gutted the entire inside. The beam is the chandeliers, the Ari Kodesh.
Uh-huh.
The stained glass windows completely made it a completely empty building.
Yeah.
Completely empty. And then sold it to a church.
And then it sold to a church.
And they had the Rosh Hashanah small rebbeim in town.
Ah, yeah. Right. So there are all sorts of kind of mechanisms. In Rav Moshe Feinstein's most prominent shuva about this, he talks about people leaving the city and they have this shul, and he talks about specifically whether you could sell it to a church. So he points out in his shuva that what helps significantly in his case is that they wanted to sell it to a specific type of Christians that didn't have any crosses in the sanctuary. They clearly were Christians. They were, you know, clearly Christians, but they, whatever, I don't know my different denominations, but they were a specific denomination that didn't have any actual crosses or actual, you know, things in the sanctuary. So he kind of throws that in as one sniff, okay, as one thing that helped the situation. And he also mentions that in that situation, the bank that had a mortgage on the shul. We'll see in a moment the issue of mortgaging a shul to a bank. And so he suggests that he says the truth is you could probably sell it anyway, directly. But he suggests that the way they do it is kind of let the bank sort of foreclose it, or give the bank a deed in lieu of foreclosure or whatever, and let the bank take title to it and let the bank then sell it and kick the proceeds back to the, you know, structure in a way so that you're not directly doing it. He kind of takes advantage of the fact that there was a mortgage that middle guy that was able to do it. But in any event, the Magen Avram quotes the Mabit, who says that if no one davens there anymore, then you could even sell it even in a krach, even in a city. That kind of all bets are off if no one's davening in there anymore, because
obviously
they're not using it. What could anyone?
Well, the whole point is that right in the beginning it was because other people passed through the town.
Exactly. Right. What possible objection could they have if no one's davening in there at all? So then the Achronim all get into a discussion. What does that mean, no one's davening in there? Does it mean there's never a minyan? Does it mean there's sometimes a minyan? Does it mean there's a minyan only with great effort? You know, so that's a whole discussion. There's a whole discussion there. Okay, so back in the Gemara here, Rami Bar Abba, right? I think it's where we're up to, right? Rami Bar Abba, Hava Kabani Bekenishta. He was building a new shul. Hava Ahi Kenishta Atika, and he had an old shul. Hava Boi Lemistri, and he wanted to break down the old shul. Uasuye Livne Kashure, and bring the bricks and the beams from the old shul, Mina, from it, the Yule Lassam, and bring it to the new shul. That sounds like a great plan, right? So the Gemara says, and he wasn't sure whether he was allowed to do that, because you're not allowed to just destroy an old shul. This is another halacha that we haven't come across yet on the staff. You're not allowed to just destroy a shul. And apparently the question arose, even if he was going to use the bricks and the beams from the old shul to build a new shul, so does that apply? So Yosef Kami Boile, and he tried to analyze the situation, Hadar Rav Chista, and he brought into account the memor of Rav Chista. Damar Rav Chista, Rav Chista said, Lo Wister Beknishta, you should not destroy a shul Ad debani bekenishta acharite. Until you build a new shul, and especially if this is the only shul in town, you can't just destroy a shul and then expect that you're going to build the new shul, because we all know very well that you can't just build the new shul overnight. It takes time to build a new shul, and you're inevitably going to be left in a situation where you're without a shul for some time. And so Rav Chisda says, don't break down the old shul until you have a new shul ready to go. And so the Gemara asks Hassam, or Rav Ashi asks, Rami Rav asked, Hassam Mishum Pshiusa. There, it's because we're worried that you're not going to get around to building the new shul, and everything's just going to go bad there. You're never going to get a new shul again. So, Kiai Gav Damai. But in this situation, where you have direct plans to use the actual bricks from the old shul and actual beams from the old shul, so is that different? Can you there do it? Can you break down the old shul even if you don't have the new shul ready to go? Meaning it's one thing to say you can't break down an old shul with the intent of building a new shul, because there things might go bad and you might not have the money, you might run out of the resources to build the new shul. But here maybe it's a little different because you're actually going to use these bricks and build the new shul with these bricks. So does that change things? So also came to Rav Papa, they brought it to Rav Papa Va'asrle, and he said, no, it doesn't change things. You're not allowed to break down an old shul unless you have a new shul ready to go. L'kamei de Rav Huna Va'asrle, and they brought it to Rav Huna, and he prohibited it as well. So it seems like the answer was no, and there's a line, again, a whole discussion among the poskim as to what, under what circumstances can you take down an old shul in order to build a new shul. Maybe it's if it's not the only shul in town, then it's okay because there are other places to daven. Maybe if you have a building down the street to rent in the interim, that's okay. Maybe
I guess if you're going to build it in the same spot.
In the same spot. We had that issue with this shul. If you had to build it in the same spot, so then the issue directly impacts you. But there are kulas you can rely on, such as if there are other shuls in town, if you have somewhere else to build. Okay. Amar Rava. Hai be kenishta chalufa uzvuna shari. So he says, when it comes to a shul, you can trade a shul, you can sell a shul, as we've been talking about. However, ogura umashchuna aser. But you're not allowed to rent it out. You're not allowed to rent it out for another use. Umashchuna, you're not allowed to mortgage the shul. So this gets into discussion about whether you're allowed to mortgage a shul. And again, the Achronim will talk about all sorts of heterim from mortgaging a shul, because frankly, most shuls need to be mortgaged in order to get the funding to build it. So the Gemara says, my taima, why is it true that you're not allowed to rent it or mortgage it? It's one thing to sell it because you're now taking the money and the kedusha of that shul is now downgraded for whatever use it's being sold for. But when you're renting it out or when you're mortgaging it, you still have the kedusha of the shul in its original state, and it's now a gnai to that kedusha to rent it out for some other purpose or to mortgage it where the bank might foreclose on it, and you're left with improper use of the shul. So livni nami chalufinu v'zavninhu shari. So the bricks of the shul also, you're allowed to swap them, you're allowed to sell them, ozufinu, but renting them, usser. You're not allowed to rent those bricks because, again, those bricks retain their original kedusha. And then he adds and he says, honey, niwi ba'atikasa. That's only true with a shul that was already in use with an old shul. Avabichadasa, but if you bought new bricks and they're sitting on the pallet ready to be built into a new shul, leslan ba, then it's not a problem. You could repurpose those bricks. Let's say, for example, you have leftover bricks after your building. Do those bricks have some kind of kedusha, or can you repurpose them to build a shopping center across the street from the shul? And the answer is that's not a problem. You can repurpose the bricks if they weren't yet embedded in the shul and be used to build the shul. And then he says, "Afilu man diomer hazmana milsehi." And this is true even if you hold, according to the opinion, that hazmana milsa. This is a machlokas throughout Shas, whether if you designate a certain material for a certain mitzvah, so is that mere verbal designation, does that now give it that kedusha of that mitzvah so that you can't repurpose that thing anymore? And the mandiyamer, that one opinion says, hazmana milsa, that actual verbally declaring that something is for the purpose of something, of a mitzvah, that gives it that kedusha you can't now repurpose. And he says that this rule that you can use a brick that hasn't been embedded in a shul yet, that hasn't yet been used to construct a shul, you could repurpose it for something that's not a shul. So that's true even according to the opinion of Hazmana Milsa, that by verbally declaring something consecrated, it's consecrated. Why? Hani mili kigona oreg beged lames. That's true only where you've done an action in addition to your verbal consecration. So you've, let's say, started to weave a beged for a mace. So there you've actually embedded that thread in a beged. And even though this beged could have gone either way, it could have been used for a mace, it could have been used for regular clothing, since you did it with the intention of using it for a mace, so this is now consecrated for a beged for a mace. Avalhacha, but here, where the brick is just sitting at the side, you haven't actually done anything with the brick. You just said you're going to use the brick to build a shul. So that's ketavoy la'arig dami. That's like a even earlier stage where you spun the yarn, which you intended then to put into the tachrichin for the mace. So since you didn't actually do something with the intention of using it for the mace, so then v'lek l'man de'omer. And therefore, even according to the man de'omer of Hazman and Milsa, it's not considered consecrated for that purpose.
What if it was repurposed from Kedusha? Like it's it was upgraded from money from, like you sold some, like Svarim or whatever it is.
So I think then you get back. I think the rule then is that you get back to the Mishnah, and you can only use it for Malim Mekedusha, with the exception that if you had Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, but Anshe Ya'ir, if it was sold with this great authority of the Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, so then the money becomes Chulin, and you can use it even for beer, as the Gemara said. Okay, Matana. What about giving a Shul as a Matana, as a present? So Pligi Ber Avacha Ravina. So this is the machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina. Chad aser v'chad shari. One said it's aser, one said it's mutter. Man de aser, the one who said it's prohibited, b'hai tafka kedushasa. Should the kedusha of the shul go away just because you decide unilaterally to give it as a present? Man de shari, and the one who said that it's mutter, said, ilav de havale hanoa minei, lav yoev lei, hader havale matanak esvinei. So he says that if not for the fact that you expected something in return, you wouldn't really have given this person a matana. Meaning, a matana is not really as gratuitous as it seems. A matana is given with the expectation that you're going to get something in return. And so therefore, you could assume that you got some kind of consideration for this matana, and therefore, because you got something for it, the kedusha goes away. Okay. Well, I looked this up, and this kind of is at odds with the rest of the discussion, because on what basis does the Kedusha go away, right? We said that even if you sell it, the Kedusha can only be used for something in a higher Kedusha. So in the Mishnah Berurah, he quotes the Machlokas Rishonim as to whether this is talking about where you have Shiva Tuve Ya'ir, right? When you have Shiva Tuve Ya'ir approving it, so then you can use the money for anything. So arguably, this discussion is assuming that you sold it with Shiva Tuve Ya'ir approving it. Okay. Now, once we're on the topic of selling a base Knesses and all these other things, the Gemara now quotes another Braisa, Tanur Rabbanan. Tashmishe mitzvah nizrakin, tashmishe kedusha nignazin. So there's a fundamental difference between something that's a tashmish mitzvah, something that's a material used for a mitzvah, and something that's tashmish kedusha that's used for a sefer Torah, a tefillin, or mezuzahs. Those are on a higher level. And a tashmish mitzvah, the rule is that once the avar mitzvah, once the mitzvah has ended, let's say, for example, your luv and esrog after sukkahs, once the mitzvah is ended, there's no inherent kedusha and you could throw it away. That's not true by tefillin, let's say. Once your tefillin get old and you can't use it as a mitzvah anymore, there's still an inherent kedusha, and so therefore they're nignazin, you have to bury them, you have to treat them still appropriately. And now how do the categories break down?
Is it talking about the tefillin itself, or is it talking about, let's say, the case or the plastic covering?
So we're going to talk in a moment about kind of how this downgrades as you get it apart. The tefillin itself, for sure, are tashmish and kedusha.
And the plastic covering?
What about
covering?
The bag? The bag itself might also be kedusha. What about a bag of a bag, the outer bag? So we're going to talk about how the levels downgrade as you get farther away from the kedusha. So Ewe and Tashmishe Mitzvah, these are the Tashmishe Mitzvah, a sukkah. So a sukkah, once the holiday is over, it has no kedusha, you can throw it away. Lulav, that's true, a shofar also, tzitzis also. Ewe and Tashmishe Kedusha, Duluskami, not just, as you pointed out, not just tefillin, but the case. Duluskami is the case of the tefillin. Svarim, Sifrei Torah, but also Sfarim of Tanakh, Tfilin, Mezuzos, V'tikshel Sefer Torah, the bag of a Sefer Torah, the cover, V'nar Tikshel Tfilin, the bag of Tfilin, Ritzuos Sein, and the Ritzuos of the Tfilin. Those are all Dvarim Shebekdusha, and you can't just throw them away once you're done with them.
Does the case of Tfilin mean the box that we put on Tfilin, or does it mean the bag
itself? No, even the bag itself.
Yeah, but you're still putting it in the case too, so it's like double.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how we treat that. I mean, the Rashi here says a sock. It says it actually is the bag.
The Ritzuos
for sure
is the same one in the bag.
The Ritzuos are in the bag directly. That's true. They're not covered. Yeah. Amar Rava, Mireish Hava Mina Hai Kursaya. He said originally I thought that this Shulchan was a Tashmish to Tashmishu, that it was kind of a generation away, and therefore it was not a Davar Shebekedusha, right? The Shulchan where the Sefer Torah sits on. Vishari, and therefore you could throw it away if the shulchan goes gets worn down. However, kevan de chazina de mosfi iwiye sefer Torah, but once I saw that they didn't just put the sefer Torah on a covering on the shulchan, but they would put the sefer Torah directly on the shulchan, like this. We don't even have a cover on this one. It's put directly on the shulchan. Amina, oh, there's glass. Amina tashmish kedusha huvaser. So I came to the conclusion. He says that this shulchan was the tashmish kedusha, that it actually has kedusha, and you can't just throw it away once it's done. Gamar Rava, Rava says as well. Mereshav, I mean, originally I thought high prisa tashmish to tashmish, that this curtain of the aron was a tashmish to tashmish, was one generation removed. And therefore you could throw it away. But kevan de chazina de aifi lei umanche sifri luye amina tashmish kedusha uvasar. But once I saw that sometimes they would actually use this curtain to directly wrap the sfarim, I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but they would use this curtain to directly, that the sfarim would actually come into direct contact with this curtain, so therefore I see that it's a tashmish kedusha, and therefore when it's done, when it's worn out, you actually have to be gonaze it. You can't just throw it away.
I think that he's actually saying that they're putting the sefer on it.
They would put the sefer on this curtain.
Right. Yeah. I think what they're talking about is the, you know, like the covering of the
yeah.
bima. So if you put the sefer on it, then it has
kedusha. Well, then, right, then it's kedusha. Is that, that's this prisa, is the covering for the shulchan? Is that what it is?
I think what this is it.
Ah, okay. Rashi says, Rashi says prisa is a yurios. It sounds almost like that, you know, inside an aron kodesh, you kind of have a felt lining.
So the sefer is leaning on it, yeah, so therefore it has a kedusha.
I would think that maybe today we're using basically an elastic bungee, all right? Possibly like the Yekis, the wimple, they use the cloth to wrap it and tie it and hold it in place.
That could be, but I don't think that's what this prisa is. This prisa sounds like something that's in the arum, not the wimple around the Sefer Torah, but you're right. That would also clearly have a status of davar shebekedusha because it's coming to direct contact with the Sefer Torah. Good. Velmarava hai tivusa di'irfit. That's the arum. That's where you place the Sefer Torah. Me'avda teva zutrasi. You can make a small a shulchan with it, that you can do, kursaya usr, but you can't make a bima for it, because that's, Rashi says, shiyarda mikdusha, so that's a downgrade. V'amarava, hai prisa debala, the curtain which is worn out, l'mevde prisa l'safri shari, you can use it to make a wrapping for the Sefer Torah, because again that's an upgrade. However, chumash and usr, you can't use it just to make a wrapping for. They would have different kinds of scrolls. Sometimes the scrolls would just be five separate scrolls, each for one of the chumashim. So that's a downgrade if you were to use it to wrap it one of those scrolls. But you can use it to wrap the worn down curtain. You can use to wrap a Sefer Torah in its entirety. The Amarava, hani zviwi, these cases the chumashi, the cases of the chumashim. The kamachri de safri and the boxes that they used to keep the sifrei Torah, tashmish kedusha ninhu v'nignazin, they also have the status of tashmish kedusha and you have to bury them. So pshita, that sounds like obvious. Obviously, you have to, these were things that directly held the sifrei Torah. Why would you think anything else? My answer is ma'od etei mahani lav l'chavod avidan v'neturi ba'alma avide. you might have thought that these things are not to give special kavod to the Sefer Torah, but they're very functional utilitarian boxes. They're just a place to store the Sefer Torah, and since they're not like decorative or in any way to give extra kavod to the Sefer Torah, they're just used to store it, that it might not have that status. Kamash Malan, no. Anything that even stores a Sefer Torah has the status of a Davar Shebekdusha. Ahud Beikanishta de Yehudei Romai. So there was a certain Beis HaKnesses that were used by the Jews of Rome. Rashi points out this was not in Rome, this was in Eretz Yisrael. The Jews from Rome immigrated to Eretz Yisrael and they stayed together as a community. And their shul was built in a certain way that the Havapatich Lahu Adruna, the sanctuary opened up into a room, the Havamachas Beimes, where they would place a dead person in preparation for the Levaya. Vavubo Kohani Lumeo Itzliyasim, and the Kohanim wanted to come to that shul to daven there. That's a problem if there's a mace in the room that the main sanctuary opens up into. It's all Tumas Olal, it's all transmitted, and the Kohanim can't be in there. So they didn't know what to do. Asu Amrulei L'Ravas, they came to Rava. Amrulehu, he said, Dolu Tevusa, take a Teva, take a Aron, a box, Osvuha, and put it in the opening between the sanctuary and the side room, kind of make a mechitza there with that aron, and that'll effectively block off the tumah. Why? Dahavale kli eitz ha'osli lenachas, because that is that's in the category or has the classification of a kli eitz, of a wooden vessel that is meant to sit permanently. The kli eitz ha'osli lenachas eino makabel tumah, and a kli eitz that sits permanently, that is not moved around, is not makabel tumah itself. And furthermore, v'chotzeis b'fnei ha'tumah, and since it's not makabel tumah itself, it acts as a chatzitza and it blocks off the transmission of the tumah, so the tumah from the mace won't come into the main sanctuary. So Amrulei, the rabbanan said to Rava, v'hazimnim in the metaltilei, that's not going to work because an aron is sometimes moved around. Kimanach sefer tere uyeh, when there's a Sefer Torah there, v'havlei metaltelam mali v'rekam, and it has the status of something that is moved around, whether filled or empty, and therefore it's not considered something that's not makabel tumah. It is makabel tumah because it's a kli that moves around, and therefore it's not going to work. And the great answer is yachi l'efshar, so therefore this fix is not going to work. They're going to have to figure out another way of blocking off the tumah. They're going to probably have to build a more permanent chatzitza between there. Amar Marzutra. So Marzutra now says, Matpechos Svarim Shebalu, the wrappings of the Sifrei Torah that got worn down, Oson Oson Tachrichim Lameis Mitzvah. You could use them as Tachrichim, you could convert them into Tachrichim, the clothing for a Meis Mitzvah, Vizu Hignizasan, and that's the way you are going to them. When they get all worn out and they can't be used now for wrapping in the Sifrei Torah, the best thing you could do with them is just use them as tachrichim for a meis mitzvah, and that's how you dispose of them. V'amar Rava, Sefer Torah Shabala. What happens after many years of Sefer Torah gets worn out, so worn out that you can't use it anymore? So Godenzin Oso Eitzel Talmud Chacham, you bury it with a Talmud Chacham. Bafi Lushon Halacha, so he doesn't have to be a super duper Talmud Chacham, he could even be someone who just has a basic knowledge of Mishnayos. Rashi says he doesn't have to be someone who knows Shas, but it could be someone who just knows Mishnayos. Amar Vacha Bar Yaakov, Ube Kli Cheres, you should put it in a Kli Cheres, Shenemar V'nisatim B'Kli Cheres, Van Yamdu Yamim Rambim. The Pasuk says that it's more respectful to put it in a earthenware vessel. Amar Papa B'Shmei D'Rav D'Rabi, Mibay Kenishta L'Bay Rabbanan Shari, Mibay Rabbanan L'Bay Kenishta Aser. You can't convert something from a Beis HaKnesses, you can convert a Beis HaKnesses to a Beis Medrash, but you can't convert a Beis Medrash to a Beis HaKnesses. It's a little bit counterintuitive. You'd think a Beis HaKnesses has more Kedusha. You're not allowed to eat in a Beis HaKnesses, but you are allowed to eat in a Beis Medrash. But this seems, you're allowed to sleep in, right? You're not allowed to sleep in a Beis HaKnesses. But here he's saying that you can convert a shul to a Beis Medrash, but you can't convert a Beis Medrash to a shul, right? That this opinion says just the opposite, that a shul has a higher level of Kedusha. Amar Rav Acha Kavase de Rav Papi Mistabra. So Rav Acha says that Rav Papi is probably right. Rav Papi sounds, Rav Papi sounds more authoritative, that in fact you can convert a shul, you can convert a basic, you can convert a basic Knesset to a base medrash, but not vice versa. How does he know that? Damar of Yeshua bar Levi beis haKnesses mutar asos a beis medrash shema mina. Rav Yehoshua ben Levi specifically said that you can make a beis haKnesses into a beis medrash, but not vice versa. And so we see from there that Rav Papi wins the day. Okay.
The council, the seven.
Yeah.